before we begin here, Linda seems to be doing very well. Appreciate all the prayers, the applications, the thoughts. Seem to have gone better than I could have anticipated. And I know she's still got a hard row to hoe. Therapy is the worst part of it, I know. I haven't been through it myself, so. But they've sent out a guy. She's already had physical therapy, at least small ways, three times this week. So sent out a nurse, changed the dressing and all that. So everything's looking good. Laura got in. For those of you who may or may not know, we were going to try to get her down here, but the deacons decided they knew they were smarter than me, as they think anyway. They decided to ask for help, and so all that need has been met, so I just want you to know how much I appreciate that. Because Laura's self-employed, it takes she can't just quit and leave. So, but at any rate, everything seems to be going very well, and secondly here, those of you who may already know, Rena has been diagnosed with AFib. And while the risk of stroke and things like that is relatively low now, the fact is it goes up 2% or 3% every year after. So while it may not be a big deal now, so they've opted to have a surgery. It's minimally invasive. Through the ribs rather than cracking the chest, which you don't want to do if you can help it. That is going to be scheduled for March 11th. So if you would note that, that is next, a week from Wednesday, I guess. Where's that going to be, by the way?
The Venice Hospital.
Venice Hospital, okay. So that'll be, and they won't give you a time till the day before, right?
Yeah, we hope.
Right, that's what most of the surgical units operate. Okay, so we won't know time or anything, but certainly pray about that. If you have any other questions or want more info, Bill said feel free to ask him. He'll be happy to fill you in. Okay, let's get back to this. We are dealing, make sure you're in fellowship here. Somebody stepped on your toes, spiritually or physically at break. Forgive them, rebound and move on. So we're dealing here with this gift of giving, and the fact that certain believers are blessed in this area, and if they apply well under it, I would expect they would be very blessed financially. And that's all good. That's one of the things I've always prayed for. I mean, I understood 1 John pretty early on in my ministry. And number one, in the ministry, the first thing you got to understand is it's not about the pastor and how much money he makes. That's not the issue ever. Pray regularly, all the time, in fact, have for years. That prayer there in 1 John, I pray that you would prosper and be in good health, even as your soul prospers. And obviously critical to good health and financial prosperity is soul prosperity first. Spiritual growth and walking in the Spirit, applying under your gift and all that sort of thing. So, but the believer who functions under this and does it right, and I don't think I put a point in here on it, if a person decides, I think, if you got this gift and they just decide, I'm not going to function under it anymore, I'm tired, I don't want to give, I'm whatever. And people grow weary in well-doing, we know that, not just in giving, but in other areas as well. The blessing may dry up somewhat. God may not bless the person. That's give and it will be given unto you, not quit giving and it will be given unto you. How that would play out, that would be up to God, obviously. But any believer that's not functioning under their spiritual gift is running a risk there anyway. So I think we closed here with point eight. Other believers who may struggle financially may come to resent the person that is blessed financially as he functions under his gift, suggesting that givers are less than spiritual because they've been blessed so much. And this is simply a form of reverse discrimination. There are very wealthy people that are horribly, horribly evil. Most of the wealthy people probably are horribly, horribly evil. We know that not much positive volition comes from the rich and the elite and the mighty. But the fact is, there are really, really poor people that are just as arrogant and evil as rich people. Maybe more so. And so, wealth or lack thereof is not a barometer of anything to speak of. Because that's something that God controls. And obviously some believers aren't blessed financially. We can ask her a bunch of questions why believers aren't blessed financially. But if they don't have their spiritual priorities right first, if soul prosperity isn't the real priority, well then financial prosperity is secondary to that. So if those aren't in place, a person might not be blessed. The lazy person, we know from the scripture, the lazy person's not blessed. We know that the person who isn't diligent isn't blessed. They may not be lazy, but they may just not follow through and do all those things that are incumbent upon a person. So they're not. The soul of the diligence made prosperous. Fat, according to the Hebrew. But that's the idea, is prosperity. If you're diligent and you're hard working, see, a man who does his work well, it says, he will stand before kings. And the idea is that God promotes these kinds of people in life. And takes care of them and blesses them because they're doing those things he has made incumbent upon them. Well, 9, those with this gift must never use their place in God's plan to attempt to control another believer's life or the ministry of some communicator by giving or withholding funds. People have done this, obviously, as you probably know. Certainly, as a communicator, I've been on the bad end of this, but that doesn't hurt me in the end. It doesn't. It hurts the person who thinks they're going to control me by money. If you figured anything out about me, it should be that you're not going to manipulate me with money by now. Because I've known what it is, like Paul, I've known what it is to barely scrape by, and I've known what it is to have some abundance. I've learned how to live in both circumstances. And so that's one of the things you see is people are going negative. That you can, and while I never know figures and facts, I don't know and I don't care, doesn't matter. But the fact is, when we had certain times, twice so far in the 30 years I've been here now, I had groups that were going negative, some parts of them anyway, and both times, right before they all left, the finances dried up. They stopped giving like 6 months or a year before they left. And if they assume that's God's will and he's blessing all that, it's not, but if whatever their thinking was, I couldn't tell you. But again, to try to control a communicator or any believer, in fact, even if you're helping another believer, you're not there to control them. And certainly, money is one of those things people do use to control other people. Well, we don't want to fall under that. Recognize money is just a tool, just like your fork and knife. They can be used for good or bad. Well, 10, one with this gift may function well under it by being frugal with himself. Alternately, one may rationalize his own self-indulgence because of his generosity with others. Both of these are extremes to be avoided. There's nothing wrong with frugality to a point until where you become a cheapskate. Being frugal implies good sense. Cheapskate has a negative connotation to it. Some people, they may not spend a lot of money on themselves. Other people, they may. But, again, in either case, what you want to do, the person with the gift has to make the decision and has to be clear on the motivation and has to understand that, oh, well, I give a lot to the church, so God wants me to have this Maserati. Okay. He may. I'm not saying he doesn't. But I'm saying that seems excessive. You know, you can get a car somewhat less than a Maserati. You know, you can buy a pretty nice car for half the price you can buy that one. Now, so but what people drive or don't drive, I judge you every time you pull into the parking lot, trust me. No, I don't. I don't care. It's fine. Some of us drive luxury vehicles. Some of us drive just average vehicles. As long as my car gets me from point A to point B, it's served its purpose. Now, you might like it to look good and shiny and all of that. Well, get out and wax it. Other than that, well, it doesn't matter what kind of car you got. None of this matters. It's just another tool to use in life to do what we're supposed to be doing. So 11, this gift has been abused in many churches by either taking advantage of those with it or by exalting those who give generously over others with a less obvious gift. I remember back at First Southern, the pastor referencing the big givers, the large contributors. And so how does this do for the person who just has, you know, like the poor widow there with her two mites? She throws it in and nobody's impressed. And yet Jesus was. He said, you know, these people gave out of their abundance. She gave out of her poverty. So a person that is working on less, God's impressed with them when they make these kinds of applications. These stand out to him, especially if you don't have a lot. So again, this gift has been abused. We're not going to do that. A 12, the one with this gift must fight the tendency to be stingy or grudging, since those whose gift is giving must function with liberality. That's the mandate there in Romans chapter 12. Again, as I told you, each one of these gifts, some of them just simply repeat the gift in a noun form or another noun form. But if prophecy, according to the proportion of his faith, and again, I pointed out that this can be taken a couple of ways. One, the person should only speak that which they truly believe, subjective faith, and or the person may should speak in proportion to the faith, the body of truth. Well, both are true. So while there's two ways to look at it, both are true. If service in his serving, teaching in his teaching, exhorting in his exhortation, he who gives with liberality, he who leads with diligence, he who shows mercy with cheerfulness. So, and obviously the person with a spiritual gift of mercy, and we'll see that, we're coming up on it here, they're dealing with people a lot who are down, who are bummed, who are depressed, who are frustrated. That's why they need comfort and mercy and all of that. Who are struggling. Well, one of the things that I've seen over the years, and this is purely in the physical realm, but I'm certain that there's a spiritual correlation here. And I observed this in the pharmacy, and I've been told it several times since then. I've seen it in other places. And that is, you have to give of yourself X amount, whatever it is. But the more you're dealing with people that are sick, for instance, like when I worked in the pharmacy, it drains on you. You can't help it. If you're a caregiver for somebody that's sick, it wears on you. You can't help it. And so people with the gift of mercy have to watch that they don't get drugged down. We'll deal with this coming up. That they don't get dragged down because they're dealing with people that are struggling in some cases. But all these gifts, again, have their way. They mandate you function under them. And this one's liberality, Romans 12:8. 13, this gift is a private parts gift and is not to be exalted before the church. It is analogous to the genitals, which, I shouldn't have to say this, but I will, one should keep covered out of modesty. And so, in the private parts gifts, this particular one, we don't overdo it, but we certainly try not to underplay it either. So, those members of the body which we deem less honorable, on these we bestow the more abundant honor. And our less presentable members become much more presentable, whereas our more presentable members have no need of it. But God has so composed the body, giving abundant honor to that member which lacked. And the idea here is on the spiritual gifts, just as you would not go parading around your genitals, hopefully, before people, we don't go parading these types of people around or making a scene about it. And that's why. That's one of the reasons why. Not the only reason, but certainly one of them. Well, M, leading, the person with this spiritual gift of leading or administration is motivated to help others by taking charge of some task or project and bringing it to a successful conclusion. Two, the person with this gift can see the larger task before the group. Now, the person with the gift of serving, they would tend to focus on the more immediate, direct need. The person with this gift would see, oh, here's a long-term thing we need to do. And they see a bigger picture. And are motivated to apply towards that bigger picture, not just the simple immediate need of the moment. So they can see the larger task before the group and the smaller tasks that will be necessary to accomplish that larger task. So you have the objective before the group, and then you're going to have to develop the way to go about, the procedure to go about fulfilling that objective. And certain people are blessed in this. They have the ability to see the big picture and to think outside the box in some ways and to organize and motivate people to apply under them. And that's why when it's been going very well, I mean, I've encouraged the deacons, delegate everything you can to let other believers apply, for one thing. But also it relieves, you know, why should they bear the entire pressure of the burden of administering the church? And we don't want that. And I don't see that as being the biblical model. Wear your deacons out because nobody else will do it. No, everybody here is responsible. Everybody here has a responsibility to the body. Well, three, he can recognize the resources he has, be they financial, physical, or human resources, and is able to organize those things at his disposal to get the job done effectively. Four, this person must be one that knows when and how to delegate authority. That would probably, I think, come as some function of this gift. They've got to, again, see the big picture. At certain points, they may need to do something. At certain points, they may need to excuse themselves from doing something. rather than attempting to do too much. That would be one of the problems, one of the pitfalls of this. You can see the big picture, but you have trouble delegating or getting help. Well, then you'll wear yourself out trying to do all that. So this person must be one who knows how to delegate. He must distinguish between what he needs to do personally and what tasks he can safely entrust to others. Five, this type of believer is able to commit to a task and overcome whatever problems, opposition, etc. that may come his way in the course of completing the assignment. Since he clearly sees the goal, point six, he is able to quickly evaluate requests, make firm decisions, and stick to them. But, I mean, this kind of person is probably a little more goal-oriented, maybe, than some of the rest of us. And a good example of all of this, and I wouldn't stop to do it here, certainly, but if you read the book of Nehemiah, Nehemiah seemed to very much exemplify sort of what a good administrator is. And you see the different, when they're rebuilding the temple and all that, you'll see the different challenges and obstacles that he faced and how he dealt with each one of them. And they ranged everywhere from the enemy standing outside threatening to attack, that we can attack you at any given time. And so part of his deal in administering this building project was he had the workers always had their swords with them. Well, most of the time you don't have to take your weapon to work, unless you work at the post office, of course. But, you know, kidding. And my work's at the post office, I'm sorry. But he had them take their swords with him for fear, because he knew the enemy could attack at any time. Then he had a situation that arose in the course of this where some of the Jews were abusing other of the Jews and usury and charging them more for stuff and this and that. Well, he took that on, took them to task, set them down, said, this is going to stop. You're going to treat your countrymen right. But he oversaw this entire thing. He was sort of the administrator of it all. So that might be a good book. That's your assignment this week. Take some time and read the book of Nehemiah. It's not long. And watch how he operated in there. And the things he, and you may not get all of it, I get it, but I think some of it should be pretty clear. So, this type of person obviously is very detail-oriented. He sees the details that make up a good job. Whereas a person with serving, they may not see the whole big picture, but they can see that thing right there in front of them. And he knows the difference between a job merely done and a job well done is found in the attention to the details. And eight, since this type of believer is largely dependent on the cooperation of those under his authority, whatever authority he may have. Now, it may be minimal, but it's going to be, certainly if it's a person functioning within the local church, it's going to have to be a delegated authority, but it's still the authority to get the job done, whatever that job may be. Well, who knows? Someday, I doubt it, we could, but what if we ever have to embark on a building program? Hopefully we wouldn't ever. Dear God, no. But surely we could find something. But and that's another whole issue. We've got such a great situation here with renting that if we ever got into a building, I mean, you're talking about the workload going up for everybody here. I mean, I wouldn't just dump it on the deacons. I mean, then we'd have lawns to mow, floors to clean, trash to take out, all that stuff. In addition to all the other things like utilities and insurance and property taxes, although we could be exempt from them, but not all of them. The church even has to pay some parts of the property tax, I understand. So, but at any rate, so he's largely dependent on those under his charge, and he may become disillusioned or disheartened when others fail to apply as he thinks or even knows they should. That's discouraging. That's one of the problems when you're a leader. It's you face discouragement of people not doing what they're supposed to be doing. And you can't let that get to you too much. Or you'll cease to be a good leader. 9, since he requires loyalty and faithfulness to complete his work, he may become guilty of partiality or favoritism toward those he deems more necessary. He must be careful not to view workers simply on the basis of their ability to get the job done. Or he may be reluctant to dismiss one that has some obvious problem. This might tend to communicate his approval of their actions to others. And so again, a couple of the pitfalls. I've got this person, I know I can count on them all the time, and so you treat them better. And at a certain level, that's okay, but at a certain level in an organization, you have to watch out for that. Even in the family. I mean, parents are aware of this. You've got children, and obviously some of your children may be more motivated, may be more positive, may be whatever. And so obviously those are kids obedient. Those are kids that are easier to like, for one thing. But you have to treat them the same. You have to pretty much maintain this status quo of, I'm not going to show favoritism. Even though you are my best worker, as it were, maybe. Or then again, on the other hand, if somebody's got some clear and obvious problem, to continue to have them on the team communicates approval. That was the letter of the law back at the time of Thomas More, Sir Thomas. And that was silence implies consent. And it's still, to some extent, the letter of the law. Silence implies consent. You have to be careful with that if you're in a position of leadership. Because if people are clearly and obviously failing and you just ignore it or don't address it, people easily look at that and say, well, he doesn't see it as a problem, I guess. And that's not good. To communicate doctrines, and I've seen this happen, for pastors to get up and communicate doctrines like separation, and then when it comes to their family, they don't apply it. That's bad. People see that. People are observant of that. You have to be able to, it's one thing to talk the talk, but yeah, you got to be able to walk the walk. We were talking about that on break. You've got to have the witness of the life, or so much of what you do is going to fall flat. Even if you're doing it for the right reasons and all that, but if the witness of the life isn't there. Because as you recognize, we have, we're together, 4 hours a week, maybe some a little more because some get here earlier than that. But if you're together with these other believers, 6 hours a week, that's more than we probably are. How much other opportunity during the week do you have to apply? And we've got all these mandates, and your spiritual gift, while it's designed to edify the church, obviously it should function out there within the cosmic world in which you live, that you may be given an opportunity to apply towards this person or that person. Doesn't matter whether they're a believer or not, even. If you're on the job, it doesn't matter if your boss is a believer. You're expected to obey. It doesn't matter if he's even a good boss. He could be a total, whatever. You can fill in the blank there with your favorite expletive. But you are still expected to obey him. And so we have all these mandates of... So obviously we stress first and foremost the importance of the body, because that's what Paul's stressing here in Ephesians. But he will address, later in Ephesians and in Colossians, the sister letter to this, he will address these matters of how we do our jobs, how we live our lives and family time and all of that, how the family is conducted. We're going to get a big section on that coming up in Ephesians 5. And then in 6 as well, how we raise our children. These are parts of the witness of life. See, you got to You got to apply towards them in that regard. So you have a gift, okay. And so I have to be careful. Okay, I got to apply towards these people. They're in my periphery. God is, and the reason I know this is all true is because of Jesus' deal. When the Pharisee asked him, well, who is my neighbor? Love your neighbor as yourself. Who's my neighbor? That was his way of trying to get out of dealing with people he didn't want to deal with. And when you're out there on the job, your coworkers are your neighbors. Your boss is your neighbor. The people you come into contact with, they're your neighbor. And so you have opportunity to apply towards these people as well. Now, they may not appreciate it, probably won't. But they may have a witness of the life, and somebody may say, you know, why do you do this? How come you live this way? And then you have an opportunity to witness doctrine to them. Who knows? Your application may bring somebody to Bible class. You never know. People, you're letting your light shine. Lights don't make any noise. Good ones don't. You don't have to run around and tout what you're doing. People will see it. They'll become cognizant of it if they got any sense at all. And if there's positive volition out there, God the Holy Spirit can use your application under your gift. Even though it's not directed, quote, at that time right towards the church. He can use that to work through other people's lives. So, I mean, again, I never hold my breath. I worked at the same spot out there for whatever it was. How many ever years it was. And nobody came to doctrine. Nobody, they would barely ask. And even, you know, and I've witnessed to several people out there. Like I told you, my boss, he was a hardcore Catholic. And he wasn't interested in the truth. He didn't want to hear it. He never asked me hardly a question at all in the 15 or 16 years I was out there. Well, so but guess what? We've still fulfilled our mandate. We've still let our light shine. We've still walked the doctrine and walked the walk and talked the talk. Here, let's see, where are we? The man in charge, okay, point 10 now. The man in charge tends to give orders without always explaining them. This is true of any authority. Any idea that your authority owes you an explanation every time they tell you to do something is not rooted in reality. They may want to explain. They may not have time to explain. There may be other considerations you don't see. And this is, again, something I heard years ago, and it's always stuck with me, and I know it's true. And that is, whenever you're dealing with people, just know there's at least one thing in their life you don't know about. And maybe one bad, hard thing that you don't know about, that they struggle with. So this is why we want to, as much as we can, treat each other with kid gloves. The world will beat us up enough out there. We don't need to be beating each other up. We want to arrive intact. The whole flock at the Bema Seat, a Philadelphia church filled with mature believers. That's my goal. It's always been my goal. And so we want to be a part of that. So the man in charge tends to give orders without always explaining them. And so others may begin to get the idea they are merely pawns in the operation and not really appreciated or respected. This is one of the occupational hazards with leading in any capacity, is that you want those you lead to know that you have an appreciation for them, that you care about them, that they're a part of the team. They're not just something that you use to get the job done. And they don't feel appreciated. So there's a time and a place for expressing that. Hey, I appreciate what you do. I appreciate the way you apply. And you don't want them beginning to feel like they're taken for granted all the time. Who likes that? How many times have you had a fight in your marriage just because of that? I feel like you take me for granted. Anybody here ever said that or thought it? No? Just me again. Wow. Okay. That's one of the things that will really irritate people, though, is that sense of being taken for granted. And I want you to know I don't take any of you for granted. I pray for all of you equally. And I appreciate the positive volition, the support, all the things, you know. Our little local church may not be big and it may not be much, but it runs pretty smoothly. And we've made it, we've weathered some storms and still here. And so I have every confidence for the future. Well, since this involves some authority at times over other believers, he must never lose sight of the fact that he is under the authority of the royal chain of command and begin to see himself as his own ultimate authority, becomes a law to himself. No. No, you may have an important position within the church, be it even as a deacon or even somebody who's been delegated authority to do something. Speaking of which, did anybody volunteer for that list? Did you get that taken care of?
Yes.
Okay, good. See, there you go. Good example. And so, unfortunately, my job is to try to keep up with all of it. And stay on top of all of it as much as I can. And I covet your prayers, obviously. But so you may have some authority, but don't get too big for your britches. It'd be the doctrinal exhortation. Because you don't put me in a position of have to bring you down. But again, a good, solid, positive, humble believer recognizes their spot and contributes in that spot. And doesn't think too highly of himself and doesn't think too lowly of himself. He has sound thinking. So 12, this gift functions within the body in a head / organizational capacity. Obviously, it's more like the head in the sense, but we know like in the body of Christ, Christ is the head. We know that. But in a local body of a church, in a particular area, this guy may function in that regard. Well, in mercy, the motivation for the believer with this gift is to help others by sharing in their needs. This gift is willing to enter into the pain, suffering, or sorrow that burdens another believer. Galatians 6:2. By the way, there's going to be a test on Nehemiah next Sunday, so I'll know if you did your homework. Now everybody's wondering, will he? No, I won't. But I'd encourage you to read it, especially and consider it in light of the gift of exhortation there. And all of that. Or leadership. I'm sorry. I said leadership. Galatians 6:2. Bear one another's burdens. And thereby fulfill the law of Christ. And so again, each person first, we have to. One of the things he's going to say is we each have to, in verse 5, we each have to bear our own burden. We each have to carry our own load. All of us have a significant and important responsibility to the body. But then there are times when some of us are burdened beyond our normal burdens that we have to carry. Sickness, surgery, illness. And there are other believers in this congregation. If they want to know, they can tell you. I won't announce it, but they're struggling with health tests that are difficult. Given the nature of society, I suspect all of us struggle from time to time financially, on and off. I mean, given what we have. Don't look at your IRA, I can tell you that much. This last week, it was a bloodbath. But we each have our own burden, but then there's times when we have these special burdens that we need extra help with. And the body should rally to itself. Should the parts, the individual parts, rally to the good of the whole by helping that part that needs the help at that time. So bear one another's burdens and thereby fulfill the law of Christ. Two, those with this gift have the ability to sense when another person is suffering. Some mental, emotional, or even spiritual distress. You can put spiritual distress in there. I can tell you this isn't my gift. I don't look at people and just have a sense. And I've seen other people, they do it. They say, oh, is there something wrong? And they have a sense of this. I would stand there and just be oblivious as hell all day long and never know. Somebody could be standing right beside me crying their eyes out. Well, hopefully not crying. I might pick up on that. Hopefully I would pick up on that. But there are people who have this empathy, this ability to connect and to sense things under the surface. Now, see, that is quite important within a body. When to know and sense when people are hurting and to do what you can. Sometimes it's not up to you to do anything. Sometimes it is. And that's, again, the sense in all these gifts of praying about it, of being cognizant of the leading of the Spirit and all of those sorts of things. So we do it right. Three, this gift has the ability to sense when people are hurting and manifests the willingness to enter into their suffering. Now, once I know that there's some suffering, once I become aware of it, which I'm generally one of the last ones to figure it out. But once I'm aware of it, I'm happy to pitch in and do my part. Now, I may not be really good at empathizing, and frankly, we probably as men have a sense that women are probably better at this than we are in many cases. I don't know that I've ever met a man thought to, oh, he's got the gift of mercy. I think surely there are. But I would suspect this gift may be even more common among women who have this natural tendency in some cases. Not all women. Not all women are like that. Some women, no, you don't want them around you when you're suffering. You know, they're there to shoot you down, make it worse. No. But women as a whole, I think, tend to sort of have more empathy and sympathy and understanding. And that's why God created two sexes. God couldn't express himself apart from male and female fully. And you have to have both of these things together to have an idea that God is this merciful, comforting, sort of mother hen type God. He's our Father. He's also a God of justice and payback. He's both. He's tough when he has to be, but he's sensitive when he has to be, needs to be. Obviously, God always knows the right response, whereas we have to figure it out. Well, for a believer that is spiritually merciful may find those that are hurting or suffering, are instinctively drawn to him or her. Because people, I think, are sensitive to this. That they have some sense of who pays attention and who doesn't. So, 5, one with the gift of exhortation may seek to explain the benefit of pain and suffering. They might exhort you, say, well, you know, we rejoice in our tribulations. What? You know, that there's a benefit. Tribulations produce patience, and this has a long-term beneficial effect in our lives. And so, so they may be able to explain it, but one with the gift of mercy will desire to share in and seek to remove the suffering. Or to mitigate it if they can. That's the idea. I never thought much about this. One of the things that occurred to me once when it was this is way back when. This is probably in 88 or 89. It was before we came down here. 89, I think, maybe. We got a real scare. Linda went in for, you know, our annual deal, and the doctor says, breast cancer. And so, I mean, he has her into the, you know, into a mammogram the next day, doing all this stuff. And then he saw it on the mammogram, I guess. And then has her in surgery like the next day or 2 days later. And you're thinking, well, this ain't good. And I just remember thinking, you know, I'm like most guys. Do you need anything? Nah. Do you want me to come and sit with you? No, I'm fine. I'm a grown boy. I can handle this. Tough guy. Like Hulk Hogan, you know, or The Rock. I am a rock. And so I was in the hospital waiting during she was in surgery and all of that. And, you know, I was kind of freaking out. And I'd only been on doctrine at that time about maybe 5 years or six or something. And so I'm handling it as best I can. And, you know, somebody had asked, do you want us to come? And no, I'll be fine. There's nothing you can do. That's always the response, right? Well, there's nothing you can do. I can sit there and hold your hand. I was going through all this test, and all of a sudden I see somebody walking down the hall there in the hospital towards me from Bible class. And when I see him, I just started blubbering like a baby. Just stood there crying. But I'm a tough guy. I've been the object of this, and I appreciated it. That lesson stuck with me, let's see, since 88 or 89. So I get choked up now just thinking about it. But you won't often see me burst into tears, generally. Those of you who have known me, probably, I've never seen it. No, you probably haven't, but it happens. I have emotions. You may not believe it, but I do. So again, one with the exhortation may seek to get it. One with prophecy may say, well, why is this happening to you? And they may want you to examine it. Well, at some point you may just need a hug. Those with this gift, again, point six, often find it difficult to be firm with people because they would not want to do anything that would cause another believer distress. Part of their motivation is to alleviate distress. So they don't necessarily want to tell people the hard things they may need to hear. Sometimes they may not need to hear anything. Sometimes they may just need a hug. And that's it. So then, those of us with verbal gifts, we're going to be quick to want to tell them something. They may not need a word out of you. They may, but they may not. It depends on the situation. That guy walking down that hall had a greater impact on me than if somebody had stood there and lectured me for 3 hours on what all was going on. A far greater impact. just by showing up. So seven people with this gift do not like suffering or conflict. Well, who really does? And can seek to avoid separation or other doctrines that are unpleasant, because their desire is to relieve suffering. But in some cases, people are suffering because of their refusal to apply separation. That's created problems for them. And so, again, the person with the sense of the gift of mercy, though, they really want the person to feel better. That's genuinely their motivation, to encourage them and help them and bear their burden with them. Well, eight, this gift obviously demands a much greater level of emotional and personal involvement than some of the other gifts. But again, all of these gifts in the local church, you have to be pretty much personally involved with these people. This is your family. These are the people you're going to live with forever. Wouldn't it be weird to get up to heaven and find out, in my Father's house are many mansions, and you're right next door to each other? You don't get to live anywhere else. I don't know how God's going to do it. I don't know what He'll do. But I know He's put us together in time as living blocks, living bricks, living stones. So why wouldn't we want to be together for eternity? Well, you might think of some reasons. But we won't have sin natures then, see? Those reasons will probably dissipate. So nine, it is very possible that certain people will take advantage of one that is so caring and compassionate, and can inappropriately dominate the time of the believer with this gift. Now, I've seen people who, whether their gift was mercy or not, I certainly knew they were functioning under it. And I think I've heard several people, and once they told them the thing, and told them the same thing two or three times, and the person just wants to come and vent or lean on you or emote on you, at some point there comes a point where, okay, that's time to pull back from that. Mercy may be your gift, but if they're continually doing the same thing and inordinately dominating your time, you can't have that either. You've got to have time for other things. That's because people tend to draw towards these people that are empathetic. Well, they can really, again, use up their energy, maybe too much sometimes. Well, 10, it is important that those with this gift be discerning as to why certain people are suffering. One would not want to use his spiritual gift to provide aid and comfort to someone under divine discipline. Now, that's where, again, the leading of the Spirit and understanding doctrine and discernment and all of this factors into all these gifts. Because your tendency may be to want to run in and do it, function under your gift, but God may be saying, hold on, buddy, slow down. Back off for a second. Because God may have a bigger picture. Well, He does, certainly. He sees a much bigger picture than we do. So this is one of the pitfalls of it, because you're so empathetic and so merciful, you don't want people to suffer, and you know, and maybe their suffering is self-induced. Maybe it's divine discipline. Do you think you can fix that with your gift? I don't think you can. Well, 11, however, this gift would be very important for those under reversion recovery, since they would likely be burdened with some significant sorrow. And we see an example of that in 2 Corinthians. And again, Paul's very vague in here. You'd have to know the whole situation from 1 Corinthians there, 5 particularly, with regard to the incestuous Corinthian. And that's what he's writing about here. But this guy recovers spiritually. He breaks off this illicit relationship with his stepmother. We assume it was his stepmother. It wasn't his mother. But it was still viewed as incest by normal people in the world. And so sexual relations with people that are blood related are, you shouldn't need the Bible to tell you that's not good. But the Bible does say that's not good. It says avoid it. But this guy, he was told he was put out of the church. Paul put him out of the church. He said, this is it. Get him out of there. He's leaving. He's setting a public example that's bringing shame on the body, bringing shame on the Lord. We're not having that. So he tosses him out. Well, the guy recovers, apparently. He doesn't go out and try to rationalize it. Apparently the discipline affected him. He realized positive believers are pulling back from me. That ought to be scary as hell, if you recognize that. That ought to tell you you're in some serious trouble. If positive believers are having to apply separation at some level towards you, you don't want that. We need all the comfort and support we can get, all of us. So he's talking about this, but he doesn't say too much here. But sufficient for such a one is the punishment which was inflicted by the majority. See, the body withdrew from him and left him on his own. And the goal was to wake him up. And he woke up. This doesn't always happen. In fact, how many often it happens, you kind of wonder. But he says, on the contrary, you should rather forgive him and comfort him. Otherwise, such a one might be overwhelmed by excessive sorrow. Therefore, I urge you to reaffirm your love for him. And so the Corinthians, of course, at first, when they wouldn't throw him out, the Corinthians, if you could get it wrong, they did it. The first doctrine was separate from him and eject him from the church, excommunication. Well, they didn't do that until Paul intervened and said, okay, I'm doing it. Now you're going to do it. Then when he comes back and the correct doctrine is to accept him, they're not quite doing that yet. And so Paul has to write him and tell him, okay, now it's time, forget all this. Put it behind you, forgive and forget and move on. Treat him like this never happened. That's the goal. And so mercy is called for in those situations. And obviously, someone who comes back, there's a way to handle this. You want to extend appropriate comfort and mercy and love and all that. But on the other hand, you don't want to fall all over them and give them the idea that somehow you're great because you've made one step in the right direction. That's good, but we're not going to fall all over you. So you have to kind of avoid extremes. So those with this gift also must be careful not to take offense for other believers. That's an occupational hazard for all of us. You might do something wrong to me and it might not bother me, but you mess with my sheep. And it's a different deal. And parents are like this with their kids. You may do stuff to me, but you better not mess with my kids. Husbands are like this with their wives. And sometimes wives with their husband. You mess with me, but you better not mess with my husband or my kids. I'll kill you. And so people can do this anyway. But obviously somebody who's very sensitive and functions under this gift, they're more maybe prone to it even. So again, be careful not to take offense for other believers, allowing themselves to be caught up in mental attitude sins or worse. Why is this person suffering? Maybe they blame somebody else. Always watch it when people blame other people. That's worrisome to me. Normally I want to hear somebody say, I've got the responsibility here, whatever it is. Now it could be that somebody's persecuting them. That could happen. But even if you care about the person, you've got to watch not getting so involved that you begin to lose your perspective on things. So 13, this gift entails, since this gift entails the emotional side of the Christian life, much more so maybe than the others. Not that the other gifts have emotions and express them and all that. But this one's much more personal. There is the danger of operating on emotion rather than Bible doctrine. That you have to watch out for. Your emotions may be stirred about this person, but the Bible may be saying, step back. So you have to be aware if that's your gift. Again, all of this, with all of them, it's the leading of the Spirit and being sensitive to that. 14, additionally, one with this gift should be very careful when dealing with single or married people of the opposite sex. Obviously, the problem here is inordinate attachments begin to develop. And the person who's being merciful, you have the principle of transference, like people with their psychologist. Oh, I think I'm in love with my psychologist. You're not really. You just think you are. And obviously, in interpersonal relationships, particularly given, and we're going to have it coming up in spades in chapter 5, given all this emphasis on avoiding the immorality and the appearance of impropriety and all that, you have to be careful. So I've made it a policy, even though this is not my particular gift, that if I'm dealing with some female, I won't deal with them, generally speaking, one-on-one. I have occasionally, but most of the time I require somebody else to be there if I'm going to have to deal with them. If it's on the phone, that's a different ballgame, obviously, because you're not in their personal presence. You're not going to be committing any attempted towards sexual sins, hopefully. But that's something you have to watch out for in wanting to help people, is that, oh, well, now I think I'm falling in love with him. Oh, you're probably not. But these types of things happen, and you have to be careful. Well, 15, this gift forms the inner parts of the body. The seat of the tender emotions. The Greek splanchnon. It means the heart, stomach, bowels. And again, they tended to view the emotions of mercy or compassion as coming from, because they make you feel certain things. You have certain, you know, when you're in love, you got a funny feeling in the pit of your stomach. Same kind of feeling you have right before you throw up. You know, it's... I'm kidding. But the inner emotions obviously affect the bodily. It's felt bodily sometimes. And that's why they tended to impute these emotions to bodily parts. Okay, well, I'm whooped. And that's a great place to stop. So I couldn't find a better one. I'm going to give you 2 free minutes today. So use it wisely. Maybe to start Nehemiah and go from there. Thank you, Heavenly Father, for the opportunity to fellowship in the things of your plan. We pray that you would sanctify this information to our future growth and glory, for we ask it in Christ's name. Amen.